I have included in our discussion of the proper use of the energy of the Thumakan, in our discussion of anger and indignation, the last two articles on emotions and spirituality by a clinical psychologist, Dr. Jane Gers, because I believe Dr. Gers does a fine job of integrating psychological insight and the spiritual tradition in her study of anger, and also of providing a very carefully nuanced notion of forgiveness, which points out both its importance, but also its gradualness as a process, and also does a very good job of distinguishing between a dangerous and potentially destructive notion of forgiveness that would deny that we have the right to remember that the other is capable of causing harm. On the contrary, forgiveness, as Dr. Gers will point out, begins on our willingness to relinquish the right to revenge and to allow the other to exist, to try to see them as the image of God, but never to pretend that they are not still capable of causing harm, especially if they are. Looking at her article first, this third article in her series on anger, the third in her emotions and spirituality series, after a number of introductory comments, intended to highlight the background to a very popular misconception that was, for a time, popular in Orthodox psychology as well, a misconception that it is a good thing to express or to get out your anger in the sense of doing things in therapy that involve shouting and screaming, or in group therapies of using tools or instruments like butakas, which were big pillows that you can't hurt other people with. There was a time when people felt that you could get anger out by expressing it. And it's been learned in very painfully over the last several decades that not only is that not true, the opposite turns out to be true. The more you express anger, the easier it is for you to express anger, and the more angry, as it were, in terms of a potential for a vice, you become. So working with anger does involve bringing it to conscious awareness, but it also, and more importantly, involves a positive decision and a constant effort to let it become something else than something you express in destructive ways. The myth that expressing anger would make it go away is perhaps one of the most dangerous misconceptions of modern psychology, which Dr. Gers is very concerned to debunk. She begins in a section on primary emotions with pointing out that many people are not aware of the fact that anger lies at the base of many of the other concerns that they have. And she tries to point out how for some people there can be other manifestations of anger. And then she also points out, as we've been noting all along with our understanding of Thumos, that there is an appropriate and proper response of anger to a threat. The threat of abuse is properly responded to by an angry no, you may not do that to me. One must be aware of the extent to which there are often secondary, or as she calls them, instrumental emotions, things that keep us from being aware of how anger is an important part of what we're struggling with. And then in another section, in her next section, she deals with the misconception of the catharsis of anger, using a traditional Freudian language. It was believed that if you could catharse, that if you could get out anger, if you could express it, it would make it go away. And one has discovered that, in fact, that can actually be a very destructive avenue. Certainly, one is not supposed to repress, to hide, to further pretend that anger doesn't exist, but one must learn constructive ways of expressing anger, which are not the expression of verbal contempt or abuse for others, or actions that seek to destroy others as well. In her section entitled "What Then?" and the description of what she calls a physical metaphor drawn from Tai Chi, she points out that what we need to try to do with our expression of our experience of anger is to recognize it as data, to learn not immediately to express anger, to take a little time out interiorly, and the most important thing is to be able to ask the question, Why am I angry? What is making me angry? What is causing me in this situation or this encounter with the other to become angry? And then what can I choose to do? How can I choose to do something other than simply reacting in a way that may be problematic or destructive? How can I use my experience of anger as a source of information that will allow me to make constructive choices about what I will then do about it in regard to the relationship or in regard to the circumstance? This is very analogous to Evagrius' invitation to ask of Christ the meaning of these things. One has to engage in a process of a kind of an interior lectio. What is the inner meaning or significance of this event? And she uses, Dr. Gerst uses, the very beautiful verse from Psalm 4, "Be angry but do not sin. Ponder it on your beds and be silent." One has to seek to understand what anger is from and what it's about. Then she talks about the importance of recovering emotional awareness, not living in a state of numbness or repression. And she, rather delightfully, I think, recovers the term apatheia, Evagrius's term for freedom from addictions and compulsions. She regards it as a kind of serenity with awareness. One needs to be able to be very aware of what the feeling is, very conscious of how one is being invited to react, but then at the same time having the capacity to make choices that are truly free choices. And Dr. Gerst particularly emphasizes the importance of having a spiritual life, of being able to enter into dialogue with and conversation with God about one's experience of anger and indeed about the whole of one's emotional life. If we drop down then to the article on forgiveness, she makes the point that forgiveness is a process, and she, as a therapist, emphasizes how vital it is not to rush the process. It may take a very long time for the person to reach a point of actually being able to say, "I truly and completely forgive the other." She also, as you read the article will find, does not say that forgiving the other means allowing them to be in a position of harming again. To forgive the other is also to want the good of the other, to not want the other to be the perpetrator of abuse or harm. And therefore, forgiveness will also entail a desire that the other not be in a position of being able to cause harm and abuse. So it involves an awareness of the information that the experience of harm gives us and a willingness to use that information well and properly. There are spiritual authorities who will say that simply relinquishing the right to revenge is superficial and is not enough. But I think Dr. Gerst emphasizes in her progression through the idea of working through emotional awareness, through a kind of emotional expression, the fact that this may well be the point at which we begin. I begin forgiveness not by imagining that I can have warm, loving thoughts for this other who has caused me terrible harm or caused terrible harm to those I love, but I begin by simply choosing not to hurt them back. I will not be to them what they were to me or to the other. I will choose not to lapse into that cycle of destructiveness. And the deliberate choice thus to relinquish revenge may well be the beginnings of our process, long and maybe slow process, of forgiveness. And she deals with that in the section called Forgiveness as Choice. And if we drop down to the section in which she's called the aftermath and the epilogue, she points out the long and slow process of this, but she also very wisely recommends that although some people emphasize the need to confront the abuser, to have this cathartic or healing conversation with the other, she, I think, very wisely points out that this may or may not be an appropriate thing to think about doing. It depends on the circumstances, it depends upon the other, and it is not something one should attempt to decide alone. It should be something that one works on in the context of a trusted counselor, therapist. There is a tendency in society today to imagine that simply confronting the abuser heals the one who is abused. Again, a notion of catharsis, and we see this in the news media all the time. Many people are very eager to sign up for the right to be present at the execution of criminals because they imagine that this will somehow heal them or enable them to lay to rest their feelings. This is very naive. It often has exactly the opposite effect. Seeing that the other is not penitent, seeing that the other is somehow unmoved, that the other is just not interested in changing, can often have the effect of creating a sense of despair or of a lack of resolution. The decision to confront and the sense of how important that is, whether by letter or in person, is something that's become very popular and I think is very properly nuanced here in Dr. Garris's article. From our own spiritual experience, I think it's a reminder to us that the process of forgiveness is primarily interior and in our relationship with God. It may well involve a healing conversation with the other, but we have to be very careful about making the mistake of imagining in the sense of our modern culture that necessarily involves a confrontation that will be healing as a result of its confrontative nature. That is certainly not what Evagrius or Cassian would regard the healing or the transformation of thumos to entail.